He's on Fox Deportes, a former BYU grade. He's the pride of Evanston, Wyoming. I believe he was probably a three-star recruit out of the great state of Hawaii, or Wyoming. The one, the only, Brady Papinga. What's up, Brady? Can you hear me?
Yeah, hey, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I got you, man. What star rating were you coming out of Evanston?
I believe at the time that I was coming out, I don't know if they had the star ratings.
Star Valley.
But I couldn't have been higher than a two-star. I probably was about right at two-star based off of, because really the only official scholarship offers that you could say were willing to listen to was BYU and Wyoming,
mm-hmm.
and that was it. And so outside of that, you know, I didn't really tell anybody they had a chance, because I said early in the process to places like Colorado and Nebraska and mm-hmm. Stanford and Washington State, all those schools that were like just making initial contact. I said, don't waste your time. I'm going to BYU. But then Wyoming, I had to give them a little more attention just out of respect to my older brother and then the fact that I lived in the state. So there you go.
And you're a good man. You would have probably garnered offers though from those schools that you mentioned,
a lot of
right?
Times,
I mean, Brady.
A lot of times I think the stars reflect how much attention is on the area that you're playing in. And Utah's been able to get a lot more stars now because
people are
paying attention to Utah more.
If he's turning down Stanford, Nebraska, you know, all those schools that he just mentioned, he ends up being a four star like Jay Caressa.
Well, I didn't turn down their scholarship, but I mean, as soon as they made contact and tried reaching out to me,
that's
told
what I'm saying,
time.
Though. You
got to milk it too. You can't commit early to get your maximum.
Yeah,
stars.
Brady, you didn't milk it. See, Jay Caressa milked it. He committed to every single school that he took an official visit to. He's like, I'll commit. Yeah, I like Oregon. Yeah,
yeah, I mean,
Brady, you know me. What are you supposed to do, man? They offer you. It sounds good. You
like,
say yes.
Two Doves brought his number 73 jersey down from the Coliseum, like from
the
lights,
the big deal?
And like placed it over his head. He was like, stick him up, Tony, and like, you know, got the jersey on. Pete Carroll giving him the spiel. He's like, I will commit to you right now, Pete.
I'll tell my son to do the same thing, man.
So, Brady, why didn't you milk it?
Why didn't I milk it? Because I just wanted to, bottom line, I always dreamed to play at BYU, and it was a dream that I was going to make happen. And I don't know, I'm a guy that, you know, have my mind already made up. You know, ask mm-hmm. my wife. I already had my mind made up. I wanted to meet her or marry her. You know, what was it, like 2 years after I'd met the woman? And she had no idea that I had those feelings. Yeah. Well, I hope we ended up getting married. But it's just my personality. I put my mind to something, and I just sort of stick on it. And that was my deal with BYU. It was my mind on it. And I wasn't going to be swayed anywhere else. And, again, I went to Wyoming more out of just, like, on that kind of trek and that kind of experience, just more due to my brother and my residency out of, you know, respect to the people I live. I didn't want to completely reject them off the bat. And then, you know, you act like you're too good, I guess, for the state of Wyoming. But everywhere else, it was just more like, you know what, I want to play BYU, and that was it. But, you know, that was before the day where, I mean, I don't remember 1998 there being many of these huge spectacles of signings where guys were choosing hats and things of that nature. So it wasn't like it. Like, today is different. I mean, come on, we're talking almost 20 years ago, guys, when I was getting recruited in 1998.
And you could still strap it up and play this day.
It was a different era. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. it wasn't like, oh, we can go on the website and see where you're at. No, you have, like, magazines that you go to, and they list mm-hmm. you. Oh, you made the top 100. You know, you get calls from. And then the best thing ever was, and we didn't have the camps like they have them now, other than, you know, you had the BYU camp and some team camps. But, you know, like, my 40 time, I remember thinking, wow, where did I get this 40 time? I could have made this thing up. You know, I really could have just, I ran like 4.5.
Shipped it
in
and said, yeah.
A lot of guys ended up doing, and they couldn't verify it. At least today they have these camps where they bring you in and they can get some standard numbers across the board. So, but as we all know, guys, recruiting is a fickle thing, and it doesn't really mm-hmm. matter where you start. It matters where you finish off. And, I mean, if you saw the Super Bowl yesterday, how many wide receivers were drafted? I mean, look at the top three wide receivers of the Patriots. Were any of those guys even drafted, let alone any higher than like a two-star coming out of high school?
Yeah.
Probably not. And yeah, look what kind of damage they did yesterday against the Falcons defense. It was impressive.
So do you think it's become too much? By the way, this is Jake speaking. Because I look.
Oh,
at
I got you, Jake. I can recognize your voice from a mile away, buddy. I got
see?
You, yeah.
Because I look at it and I think, you know, Brady, you were a fan favorite at BYU. I'm willing to admit you're one of the better players that I've gone against. You were a fan favorite in Green Bay. You had enough personality for people to really care about what you wanted to say. I've heard you on the radio. Locally there, and doing NFL radio, now things in the state. I mean, you've kept your name relevant. You've used what you were good at in football and rolled it into a few other opportunities. So I look at some of these kids and I think, you know what? Go ahead and do it big. Go ahead and you try and live the moment. Now, you do have to end up backing it up. Do you think it's gone too far? I mean, I remember signing the letter of intent, and they offered to do an assembly and a hat ceremony and local TV crews, and I just didn't want to do it. You know, you probably just signed at home in Wyoming and faxed it in. Do you think it's become too much, or do you think that it's okay for these kids to reap some of the rewards and promote themselves?
Try to leverage it a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, I get what you're saying. Yeah, the way I always look at it is let your playing do the talking, you know, and just things will work out naturally based off of just what you do versus what you say. But where I come from is more of this idea to where a lot of guys who do this, they tend to think that they've arrived. They tend to think because of that attention that they don't need to go back it up, that the coaches are going to just give them spots, that they're going to be able to walk in and immediately be placed in the starting position, and that, you know, if they get put on the bench or they have to compete with somebody, they're being disrespected, a la Jake Heaps, and then they want to transfer, then they're running away from challenges. And so if anything, I think it leads to this idea of entitlement and this idea of that things are going to be given to you, when in fact there is no world that exists. That is a false principle. Everything you have to do, you have to grind it out. You have to work for everything you get. Nobody gives you anything. And that's, I think, what is the miscommunication with a lot of this stuff, is that they're just given this opportunity to have the platform based off the fact maybe at that age they have this special size, the speed ratio that then gives them the star rating, that then gives them this attention, when in fact they really didn't do anything where the rubber hits the road to earn anything, and then they're misinformed. And the good thing about Alabama, for example, you know, Nick Saban, he'll go do the dance, he'll go do all the things to get guys to think, oh man, this guy loves me, and as soon as he gets them under that contract, man, he humbles them, not only on the field when they find out they're, you know, in order to compete and get on the field, they have to beat out guys that have been also chomping at the bit and waiting for a couple of years to get on the field. But he lets them know that you won't see this field unless you pay the price. And that's why you see phenomenally talented guys at Alabama with some of the greatest work ethic. And again, I'm going to reference yesterday, like Julio Jones. The guy has probably the greatest skill set, maybe the top five, that we've ever seen in the game. But if you watch this guy play on a down-in, down-out basis, this guy, I mean, he grinds it to the axe. He earns everything he gets. And that's the thing that I do believe in the whole circus of the signing day that can be lost, is that guys tend to think, oh, I can just show up and they'll give it to me, versus I have to grind it harder and more intense than I ever even can imagine just so I even have an opportunity.
Brady Papinga on with us here, Cougar Sports, ESPN 960. Were you able to evaluate the 2017 signing class of BYU? And if so, what were your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, man. I'll tell you this about any class. Well, talk to me in about 4 years. BYU's is probably 6 years. I'm going to tell you what they got. I don't care about any of these kids. I'm going to be honest. I don't care. You signed, great, good for you. Let's see what you do. Show me something. Let's see what you got. Ben Criddle, I never knew about you until you went on the field and you started freaking making plays. So, Ben, you are a phenomenal recruit that BYU got, even though you had to probably knock Bronco's door down at least 10 times for him just to give you a chance. So I'll let you know what I think of these guys as they go out on the field and they play some ball, and we'll see if they can produce. If not,
I never knocked on Bronco's door. He didn't have lemon drops for me to stop in and grab.
But Ben actually had a negative star. There was a guy that was a 3-star that they averaged out and made him a 2-star, because when Ben came in, they had to bring one person down.
You know what, Ben? Hey, man, you went and dominated again. I'm not, no hard feelings with you, Ben. You did not have that ability that jumped out on you in terms of what the measurables are.
I'm the best cornerback ever to come through BYU.
Matter. You went out and made plays. You were part of some of the most dominant defenses in BYU history. You were one of the best cornerbacks that any defender could ever ask for. And ladies and gentlemen, that's all that matters.
Amen. No, I can appreciate those thoughts. I think you got to realize, I mean, BYU fans, and I think all fan bases around the country, just love delving into the future, right? It's always about the potential, right? But I'm a blue collar guy.
I've never seen ex players get very excited about stars, because we've all seen guys come in, and sure, you have some 4-star guys that come in and end up playing a lot of downs.
Yeah.
But you also have so many busts, and then you have so many guys that you see that you play with that are so great and didn't have any stars.
Mm-hmm.
And so your experiences as a player, they ruin the star system for you because you've played with enough Jake Heaps to know that a high rating really doesn't matter. You've played with enough Ben Crittles to know that a low rating can be irrelevant too.
Brady, let's talk Super Bowl now. I don't even know where to start with this, but let's start with this question. Biggest comeback, or was it the best comeback in Super Bowl history, or was it the biggest choke job in Super Bowl history?
No, I mean, my theme to our conversation has been you got to earn it. Nobody's going to give you anything. I'm not saying that either team played like the most cleanest game that you could ever imagine. They both had their mistakes, and they both, I thought, did a nice job of capitalizing on each other's mistakes. I believe we were witnessing a level of quarterbacking that we've only seen a couple times in the last 10 years. We've seen, obviously, Tom Brady in that second half. I mean, guys, he was dropping dimes, slipping in close, tight windows that I just was, I mean, it was just like, wow, this is a whole nother level. And it was like, it wasn't, and the thing that the young quarterbacks need to learn, I know Taysom struggled with this and Steve Young piped in on it. What Tom kept doing, because when we were calling the game at Fox Deportes, usually you're on the 50-yard line, but there were so many groups calling the game, we actually were behind the Falcons' end zone. And so you could see the quarterback's perspective, especially when Tom had his back to us, and he was moving the ball away from us down into the end zone with the Patriot sign on it. And it was mind-blowing to me the blind throws he makes to where guys are not open. There is nowhere to go with the ball, but he has immense amount of trust, not only in his players that he plays with, but then also in his ability to fit it in the right spot where it needs to be fit. And I was like, holy cow, I mean, this guy's just throwing it to a spot where he's expecting his guy to be, and he's there. And, I mean, it's just like, what? And so, I mean, that's what I saw. I saw a quarterback in Tom Brady play at one of those historic levels that – and we saw Aaron Rodgers play at that level probably the last stretch of the NFL season until he ran into that same Falcons team. We've seen Drew Brees play at this level. Peyton Manning years ago played at this level. So, like, the elite guys, you'll see them all of a sudden rise to this level to where it's just they are playing at a level that's – I mean, you just sit back and you shake your head like, I don't know what he's doing. I don't know how he's doing it, but he's doing it, and that's what I saw. I saw that at Tom Brady. Sure, you can say, well, what about that sack that Matt Ryan took that knocked him out of field goal range when they could have gone and kicked a field goal, put him up 11 with, like, what, 4 minutes to go? Stuff like that. Sure, you could say it was a choke job, but I mean that's to me splitting hairs, and that takes away from the greatness that was Tom Brady yesterday.
What was the worst, or I guess the most egregious set of play calls or play call execution wise? Was it the 3rd and 1 in their own territory that ended up being a sack, strip, fumble? Like, which one were you, I guess, most frustrated with? Was it the 1st and 10 from New England's 22 that you just mentioned? Or was it the sequence after the failed onside kick that you were like, oh my gosh, how did they not execute at that with that short field?
I mean, I didn't think that. I could see where Kyle Shanahan was coming from, because the whole game up until like midway through the fourth quarter, I kept saying the Patriots don't have any answers, and they didn't. And it's like, why? Out of that kind of knowledge base, with that kind of feedback, I wouldn't have changed anything if I was like, we're going to score, and we're going to score at will, and we're going to make this to where it's out of hand, and why change anything? Now, understand that, you know, the old philosophy, the Pittsburgh Steelers philosophy, you know, you basically, you have a lead, you nurse that lead, and then you do the old school run to win the game. And I agree with that. I like that. But Matt Ryan, MVP, he was playing at times sort of flirting with that elite status. Obviously, he just fell short of it. But that's, I get the thinking, and it's just, I believe it was a failure of a guy, Matt Ryan, and I'm not trying to say this guy failed to the point of where he choked, and you know, but he just, it just shows how special it is when Tom Brady and those guys get up to that level, to where a guy like Matt Ryan just couldn't transcend the ceiling that he sort of hit, which was where the ball was put into his hands to win the game for his team in a crunch time situation, and he just couldn't do it. He just couldn't deliver. So, it was, to me, just that kind of situation. It's just like Matt sort of hit his ceiling. You know, maybe he burst through it, maybe he doesn't. But again, it just, to me, it was the contrast of what it looks like on Tom Brady's side, to where he transcends that and goes to this level that's almost indescribable, to where, you know, a guy like Matt Ryan, you think can get there, and lo and behold, he hits that mental block or whatever block he ran into, and they just didn't finish the job.
Brady, Kraft, Belichick, Brady, this is a dynasty. why is and Jake was mentioning this earlier. How many Hall of Famers has Tom actually played with? How many? What type of players have been surrounding him as he's led them to these five
it's
Super Bowls?
It's a different group of guys every single run.
Yeah, every single
and
run.
And it's almost like they're interchangeable. I wouldn't say they're insignificant. They're significant. But, you know, you have this hero in the running back, and where has this guy been all season? And it could be someone new next year, and it could be a different set of receivers. Gronkowski
goes down, and it's not replicable?
No big deal.
How is this not? I mean, no one's able to replicate what New England has been able to do, and it seems like they have a bunch of role players for most of the time.
Well, it's interesting because look at – I don't know if you guys – did you hear the backlash of Terrell Owens? Did you hear everybody saying it was a – they basically screwed him over by not letting him get into the playoffs?
Yeah, and I loved your thoughts on Fox Deportes. Loved your thoughts on Fox Deportes. Listen to that, and I agree.
Yeah, well, it's that – I think it's a societal thing in the sense that everybody is very caught up with the attention. You know, let me go get the numbers so that I get the fame. But they don't realize that – there are other kind of unquantifiable values and statistics and contributions you make that nobody ever sees and that you only know about. And it seems to me that Bill Belichick has a corner on the market of finding those guys. And he's done it ever since he got the original crew together. Teddy Bruschi, Ted Johnson, Mike Vrabel, Richard Seymour. Offensively, he had, you know, obviously Tom Brady, Deion Branch, you know, oh, man, the Brown guy, Ty Law, those guys, they were the ones that set the tone basically for the culture that became what we know as the Patriot way. And those were the guys that they would do anything. I mean, it was like, you know, they were the jack of all trades, masters of none, but really they were the masters of everything. And they were even to the so unselfish to the point and just didn't care about attention to the point where guys like Teddy Bruschi constantly, just like Tom Brady's doing right now, by the way, would give the Patriots a hometown discount. Say, hey, you don't need to pay me like a top inside backer. Give me a deal that's good, that you know, that's worth it for me, and let's save that money and let's retain a guy like Mike Vrabel. Let's retain a guy like Ty Law, and all those guys bought into that. And all of a sudden, in a free agency era, not only able to maintain the core of their team, but at the same time, they're having sustained success, which all these other teams were trying to do, and they couldn't do it. So all of a sudden you have this culture of you're going to go in and they have that mantra of do your job, which really means I'm going to do whatever it takes to help the team win. I don't care if I get my name in the paper 1 week and then the next week I'm obscure and nobody even knows about me. You know, Ben Watson played with these guys. I don't refer to him. He's a tight end. And, you know, there'd be games where they go out and he would be the centerpiece 1 week and then the next week he wouldn't even have a target. They wouldn't even throw him the ball. And that's just how they operate because ultimately what Bill Belichick's able to do because of that team-first culture, unselfish culture, or they're not caught up with the stats, is he's able now to use creativity with a flexible scheme set to where he can manipulate and mold the scheme to address any of the teams that they face as weaknesses and face their strengths and whatever. And so he's able to take guys that are versatile and team players and on a week-in, week-out basis, customize the game plan depending on who they're seeing without any concern of, oh, this guy, I got to keep him happy, man. He's volatile mentally. Oh, boy. You know, T.O. kind of guy. Mm-hmm. To where now he's like, I don't care. You know, these guys don't care. We don't care. We just want to do what it takes to win. And so he's not doing anything special. He's just been able to establish a true team-first culture, and then he's able to find guys that are buying into that, and look at what happens. It's no accident that they're the best year in and year out. And, I mean, I'll even transcend into basketball. It's no accident you see a team like the Golden State Warriors. I don't know if you've had a chance to watch them play. They are a work of art. They play as a team. I mean, there's a lot of power behind that. And that's what Bill Belichick's been able to hone in and tunnel. And ultimately, he's been able to parlay that and leverage that into being tremendously successful for 15 years plus.
Last few questions for you, Brady Papinga, on with us here, Cougar Sports, ESPN 960. Kyle Van Noy, what did you think of his performance?
Loved it. He did exactly what he was asked to do, which is give him a hardcore effort on special teams. He did it. Come in nickel situations and be what they call the Joker to Florida. I said he's going to be X-Factor, and you know what? By golly, the backs were minimized on third down. If you don't believe me, go check the third down stats against Atlanta Falcons. I don't know if they even hit 40% conversion of third downs, which, by the way, was tremendous in that game. And Kyle was a big reason. And what they did with him, and they've been doing this all playoffs, is that they put him as the fourth rusher. And sometimes they'll rush him as the fourth guy, and he's tremendously effective up in the middle, by the way. He'll play. He'll do TE games where he'll go out and pick for the end to wrap around. He'll even rush himself, and he's slippery enough and strong enough to slip through there and gain pressure up the middle like a big 300-pound D-tackle, unbelievably enough, as he got in on a half a sack in the game, by the way, and had a couple other pressures. But then at the same time, he has the ability to sort of do what they call a hug rush. So he'll look like he's going to rush. The back then, instead of getting this nice, you know, pretty release, you guys have seen that, right? When a back mm-hmm. knows that, okay, I don't have to participate in protection, they'll go on this nice arc release and run an option route as everybody else is sort of running like a clear out, you know? The backs can't do that with him. They have to respect that he may come up in the middle, and so they're coming up inside, and sometimes he'll just stop and he'll hug rush him, meaning he'll go to the back, hug him, and guard him. And if you look at the third down situation, Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman, they were neutralized, which was tremendous. Nobody had done that all year. And so I had a bunch of people, I hate to bring them up, but you got these people that, Brady said that Tevin Coleman could be an X factor. He's been terrible. Well, go look at the film. You'll see that he was tremendous and has nothing to do with me being a BYU guy and him being a BYU guy, but the fact that he did his job and he did it at a high level, and lo and behold, all of them did, and that's the result. You go and you pop off one of the most historical, amazing games you'll ever see.
I mean, he's a really good example of what you were talking about before, and Belichick being able to find guys. I mean, Kyle Van Noy, as talented as he was, just wasn't working in Detroit. As much as we all wanted it to work, it wasn't. And the Patriots trade away their best defensive player and bring in Kyle Van Noy. I mean, Gronkowski goes down on the offense, and what happens? The people that are behind them step up.
Hogan and Bennett step up.
They buy in, they step up, and guys find ways to fill it in. It's more of a system.
Yeah, and also, Bill Belichick, the best thing that he loves about it is he also sends an indirect message to guys like Van Noy and these guys that they bring in midseason that play tremendously is that, you know what? I mean, although you played really well, if you ask for too much money, you're expendable.
And so
it's a leverage play too by Belichick, to where it's like, hey, I'm not only throwing you a bone that I can bring you in midseason, we can have this kind of success, but also understand that there's probably a couple other guys I could do that with. So be careful, because that's what happened with Jamie Collins and Chandler Jones. As they started to engage, the Patriots did with their contract situation, they realized these guys are asking way too much money. We don't want to pay it. And let's go look for some training partners. So,
see you later. Yeah.
It's a situation where he's not only added guys that, he's used that other teams didn't see a need for, like Kyle, but at the same time, he's also establishing a certain level of leverage in future contract negotiations with this. I mean, he's running a heck of a program up there in New England. He continually does more with less than you'll ever see. I mean, it was funny. I mean, if you just seen these guys, I mean, it's just unbelievable. You'll see the Patriots come off the bus, and you're like, oh, my gosh. It looks literally like a bunch. Okay, there's some big guys in there, but like Martellus Bennett. But it literally looks like an accountant firm getting off the bus with guys like Hogan and Edelman. You're like, whoa, okay.
Amendola.
And then you see, Amendola. And then you see the Falcons come off, and you freaking see the specimen of a human being like Julio Jones and, Vic Beasley. And you're like, this isn't even going to be close, right? Not the case.
They're bought in. And then they even reap the benefits of, situations like Randy Moss, where he's largely interpreted as one of the more selfish players in the whole league. Mm-hmm. Career is on a downward spiral, and he humbles himself and comes back and has a record-breaking season in New England because he still has a lot of talent. And I don't know, it's just a cool system to watch.
We want to keep our Twitter fans happy. One of them, Notre Blaine, asked the question, and I don't know what the question or what statement this stemmed from, but apparently you had a spat with Brady Quinn like 3 or 4 years ago on Twitter, humbling him. You stated that if Notre Dame had to operate under the BYU honor code, there would be no team. No team equals no football. No football equals no schedule. Looks like you have no argument. What was that from?
Oh, it was a situation where he was, and I hear this from all these freaking Notre Dame people. Oh, we have the academic requirements are so steep we can't recruit any talent. Just go Google real quick. Who has the most NFL talent from any school in college football? And you'll see that Notre Dame, I believe right now, is at least top three. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, will you guys stop your whining? And I mean, that's basically my whole message. Like, stop whining. Stop acting like you guys have everything so hard. And that's where that comment came from. It's like, dude, if you guys operated under BYU's honor code, you'd have no football team. And as every team in the country wouldn't have a team. like, stop your whining. You know, it could be a lot more challenging considering the circumstances. And that was my message to Brady Quinn.
Love it, man. Always bringing the heat. Brady Papinga, nobody does it better, man. Appreciate you hopping on with us. We invite all Cougar fans to follow you on Twitter at Brady Papinga. Thanks for hopping on,
and,
man.
Oh, by the way, before you let me go, I gotta send out a message to let everybody know that I'm doing this cool contest, and it's one that it's called Workout for Cash. I don't know how many since you guys probably played was the last time you've worked out for cash. But what I've done is I have a revolutionary workout device installed in Vasa Fitness off of University Parkway and 800 North. It's called the XPT. It's an omnidirectional Smith machine, okay?
Okay.
It's the safest, most efficient, functional way of weightlifting. And so what the contest is for everybody is you go in, video yourself doing any kind of exercise. Over a month's time, what I'm going to do is I'm going to choose the person who is the most diverse in terms of who's done the most different kind of exercises, like bench, squat, whatever. You know, don't go in there and just do curls. And then also, I'm going to reward the winner of who did the most, who was the most consistent over the month. Here we are starting February 6th. I'm going to look at my Twitter feed, at Brady Papinga. Just tweet it to me. Your video is at Brady Papinga. And again, the most consistent and then the most diverse user is going to get $100 in cash. This isn't like some kind of coupon. This is cash, hard money, baby. So Workout for Cash contest, tweet it to me, tweet your videos, the most diverse, most consistent, you're going to get yourself $100 in cash. Again, it's at Vasa off of 800 East and University Parkway in Orem, Utah.
Yeah, Brady, do you have a, kind of a link explaining all that, website that we can tweet out and share with our listeners?
Yeah, tell them to go to www.VXPT.com. VXPT.com.
VXPT.com. All right, we will spread the message. Thanks so much, Brady.
All right, fellas. Thanks for having me.
All right, Brady. Have a good one, man.